Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Is there any vetting process on your part when you work with your customer? Is there a certain level of quality that you expect? Not just, obviously, of your own operation, but do you review the product before you agree to sell barrels?
You know, we'll taste their, you know, ideally we'll taste the wines with them and have a discussion with them to make sure, you know, we have the right fit with our product with them. You know, sometimes people may decide we don't have the right, you know, wood or toasting profile to fit what they want. You know, that happens.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you have such long-term employees and, you know, extraordinary artisans that contribute so much value. Have you been making any changes, like technologically or in any other manner, to how you operate your business since you've started it?
Well, obviously, inside the cooperage, we're always trying to invest in new machines. Mm-hmm. We did some investment a couple years ago where we bought a few new machines, mm-hmm, that were for improve the operation in terms of, you know, how the production was going, for the safety, for the quality. Mm-hmm. So we're always looking at those types of improvements, whether, mm-hmm, it's here or in France. We do have a full-time R&D team in France that's active in research with people at the University of Bordeaux.
Wow.
We do a lot of research into what is the chemical composition of wood. Mm-hmm. Our head of our R&D department, Dr. Andre Priya, he has a PhD in oak chemistry. So he does a lot of research. He's done articles with Wine Business and Wines and Vines. He comes to speak in the US frequently. He does speaking in France and China and Australia and different countries. So we're doing a lot of research to really understand what is the chemical composition of oak. Mm-hmm. And we do have some products that, rather than relying on the origin of the grain, we do some chemical analysis of the oak before we make the barrel, that we've developed certain profiles that, based on the chemical profile of the oak, fits into specific categories that can give the winemakers a very distinct profile, but also a very consistent that is reproducible year after year.
That's absolutely fascinating. So on the one hand, you have people that have touched this wood for decades that, you know, is a very traditional in some ways. On the other end of the spectrum, that is really innovative mentality, where you're investing a lot of resources, not just for the strictly business purposes, in other words, to be able to reproduce, like you described, consistent product, but also kind of really getting to know the material that you're working with on such an intimate molecular level.
Yeah, I mean, our philosophy as a company is we have a historical, you know, cooperage is an old craft, so we're doing and making barrels the way people have for hundreds of years. But we also have to think about, you know, what are the advances we can make using technology and R&D and kind of trying to aspire to innovate as well, because we can make barrels the way we have for hundreds of years. That's no problem. But we're also trying to be a very innovative company and come out with new and unique products that are different from our competition.
Do you encourage people that you work with to, you know, winemakers, distillers and such like that, to get to know the side, the barrel side, in a more intimate sense as well?
You know, we always invite our customers to come visit the cooperage, mm-hmm, to do a tour with us, to meet the coopers, talk to them, ask questions. We have some customers that will bring their distributors in, or if they have special visitors that are in town, we're very open with that to help them. We have some customers that have shot video, different videos, marketing videos for the winery, things like that we help them out with. So we always invite people to come in and see. And when our R&D manager is here, we take them out to see certain customers if they have real technical questions about oak chemistry, specific barrels they're using or toasting, to have him be a resource as we can.
That's fantastic. You've been in the industry now for several decades. You've observed all sorts of things. What do you feel the industry is currently at, and what do you feel it's trending or going? What do you feel the future of the barrel industry is?
I mean, the barrel industry, at least here in the U.S., I mean, is still very strong. There's more new barrels for wine bought in the U.S. than any other country. It's the biggest market for new wine barrels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the American market is really in looking for premium product, aged in barrels. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of wines here aged in stainless steel tanks with barrel alternatives, which we're in that business too. We sell those products also. But as far as the cooperage business, you know, it still remains very strong. There's still a strong demand for barrels. People are looking for what's new in the market, new toasting, new types of oak selection processes. They're very interested to find out what's new and innovative.
Got it. And then the spirit side, obviously, there's been an explosion. It's kind of trending, I feel like, in the same direction as beer. The craft beer industry has been growing by leaps and bounds, and I feel like the spirit business has taken the same tack. So there must be more demand coming from that side as well.
There's more demand, but it's really not our core business. There's other coopers that make, you know, over 1,000 barrels a day that supply the big distilleries in the United States. So for us, it's a smaller business for us. Obviously, mm-hmm. we do still sell a large number of barrels for cognac in France, because that's where our headquarters are. That's where we came from. We still do a lot with cognac. Mm-hmm. But for in the U.S., for spirit barrels, you know, we're still really small. We're only working with real craft people that want something different than what the big bourbon coopers create, because they're producing thousands of barrels a day. We're producing 90 barrels a day. They're looking for something a little more handmade, you know, charred over oak rather than gas fires. And our barrels are more expensive. And, you know, not most people in the distilling business don't want to pay more money for their barrels. But the ones that really can come in here and they see what we do and they appreciate it and they like that philosophy we're doing, those are really the people we're working with. So for spirits in the U.S., I mean, our business is tiny compared to the big bourbon coopers in the Midwest that are making lots and lots of bourbon barrels. We're tiny.
Interesting. So as far as the customization, you referenced it earlier, is that also a very small segment of what you do with individual wine producers?
Yeah, I mean, most people are using our standard shapes, grains, toast levels, mm-hmm. medium long, medium plus toasting. Sometimes people have some ideas of maybe mixing some types of wood. You know, we do some barrels that are, say, American oak body, French oak heads. We've been doing this for a long time, called a hybrid style barrel. So sometimes if they have some new ideas they want to try out, we see how we can work with them on them. But for the most part, people are using our standard woods, shapes, and toast levels.
Interesting. You mentioned sustainability with respect to France. They've really paid attention for hundreds of years, it sounds like, in terms of replenishment and such like that. So we're thinking ahead. I don't know if that model really is as prevalent in the U.S. or other countries. Do you have any concerns about that? Any thoughts?
I think there's concerns. I mean, the United States is a huge country compared to France, and they have a finite amount of resources. And they've done an excellent job to create a system of renewable resources for this this oak to grow and sell. Mm-hmm. You know, in the U.S., it's mostly from private-owned land, so it's up to the landowners of what they do. Mm-hmm. Some may be more sustainable, some might not. There's different universities that are trying to do studies to look at the long-term forecast of mm-hmm. the availability for white oak in general. Some vary state by state. Some states like Wisconsin are a little more, they do some work to incentivize the landowners to do some work on their properties to have a little more sustainability. So sometimes it's done on a state-to-state basis. But there's no general outlook I can give. I think we just have to, I think there's a lot of research going on to look at that, and I don't know if they have a lot of conclusive data on that at this point. But in reality, it's up to the landowners who are cutting and selling the trees from their property of what they do with it.
Fascinating. So Christopher, you drink wine, right?
Yes.
So I wanted to get a little bit more personal about the relationship with what you do and the wines that you consume. Mm-hmm. Have you had opportunities to taste wines from a certain producer, let's say, that's made in your barrels, you know, different variations? And how did it land on you? What were your impressions?
You know, that's how I started in this business. Okay. You know, when I... You know, obviously now I'm running the Sig & Merle company here in the U.S., mm-hmm. But I started as the account manager, and I was visiting the wineries every day, and I was tasting the wines with them, helping them evaluate our barrels, making the suggestions of what they should try and what they should purchase. So I've done all that, and for me, it's, you know, a dream job, really, because if you like wine and you're passionate about it and you're getting to talk to winemakers every day about what they're doing, how they're doing it, trying the wines with them, you know, and drinking wine at home with dinner every night, you know, I've done that. I've been in the cooperage business now for it'll be 15 years mm-hmm. next year. You know, now I have a little different role from what I'm doing. I'm not out tasting wine with the winemakers like as much as I used to, but I still try to get out in the field with my salespeople each month. But that's where I came from, and I've experienced that. And you learn a lot about wine and tasting it in different grains, different toast levels, different origins, and being able to make those recommendations to them.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in the Bay Area, okay. Just outside San Francisco in the East Bay.
Got it. And how did your interest in wine started? Was it something you experienced in the context of your family? Or?
Yeah, really with family. My father's been purchasing wine from the Napa Valley since I was young. Mm. I think as I grew up, I didn't really notice it mm-hmm. too much. But I went to college in San Diego, and I remember once my parents are separated and remarried, and my mother came up here for a trip, and she was living in Los Angeles at the time, and they came back and they gave me a bottle of wine from their trip, and I think I drank it at my apartment in San Diego, and you know, really kind of enjoyed it. And as I started to come home for Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, you know, wine would be on the table, and you start to try it and drink it and get an appreciation for it. And as I got out of college, my father would sometimes bring me up to Napa and Sonoma and tag along with them with some tours and events they'd go to. And so that's kind of how I developed it, and mm-hmm. was living in San Francisco, going out to eat in restaurants, working there, and just kind of developed a real, you know, passion for wine. Mm-hmm. And ended up moving up to the Napa Valley because my wife grew up here, and that's how I got into the business.
Serendipity. So what was your degree in?
Experimental psychology. So I have a degree in psychology from UC San Diego, and I got into sales, and after that, outside sales, working around San Francisco from like 96 through 2002.
Wow. So how did you wind up working with barrels?
So my wife wanted to move back up here because her family is here. And I was looking for a job as I had a sales background. And I saw an advertisement for a barrel salesman. And I sent my resume and they called me. I interviewed and they hired me.
Wow. What was it like when you first started working for a corporate?
It was a new thing for me. I mean, I knew about wine. I didn't necessarily know about wine production. I don't have a degree in it. But I was a fast learner and knew other people in the business with friends here and did a lot of work my first year of tasting a lot of wine with all the customers and really listening, listening to what they had to say and learning more than talking maybe. And that's how I learned. And you know, put in a lot of hard work over the first few years, and it worked out for me.
What was the first wine? Was that the one that you were given as a gift that really kind of rearranged your mind about what wine is?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, growing up, like when I was in like elementary and middle school, you know, my mom would go to the grocery store and buy like the big jug wine that everybody drank back then. And that's, you know, what you saw. But then as you got older and you're given a really nice bottle of wine and you taste it and it's really different and all the different aromas and flavors, and especially when you're having dinner or some kind of food with it, it just kind of changed everything.
Do you have favorite producers?
I mean, there's so many producers we work with. I don't have a ton. I mean, it's really hard to do favorite because there's so many producers I like in Napa, but I've traveled all over in, you know, Paso Robles and Santa Barbara County and Oregon and Washington. And there's so many that I've, you know, really like and some that I buy and keep at home.
Are there some notable personalities for you that really gave you so much insight that, you know, maybe even mentors of sorts along your wine tasting journey?
You know, the first company I worked for, you know, they were very supportive and helpful, although, you know, I was very independent in what I was doing. There was a few key people, like there was a winery in Oregon I became very close friends with, and every time I'd go up there, we'd do really extensive tastings of all their trials for, you know, an hour or two, and really learned a lot. There's a couple winemakers in Napa that I became friends with that we would do, you know, more tastings there that had a lot of different barrels that you can really learn a lot what the different grains and toasting does. And you know, there's just a lot of different people that, you know, you'd become, you know, a lot in this business, there's a lot of relationships you develop and friendships, and it just really helped.
We came up frequently in our conversations, sort of the subjective piece of it, which is different toasts, different grains, different ways of creating a product that's already inherently subjective, you know, based upon how it was raised and where it was grown and what the winemaker's point of view is. That piece of how, again, the barrel part of it, how it's handled, is it only a matter of style at this point? Because clearly you create a quality product, right? So the baseline is there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, most of Coopers create a very good product, very high quality product. And so, you know, the winemakers will develop, you know, their preferences for the Coopers they like. Maybe the salespeople they like as well. And they have a subjectiveness to it too, because, you know, what you taste and what I taste are going to be really different. And even when you taste with the winemaker, you may have some differences of how you perceive it, which each of us is unique and different. And that's why, you know, sometimes at the wineries they have involved several people in the evaluation, because you have different opinions. So that's always there too when you talk about subjectivity, because, you know, the winemaker may say, okay, I want a barrel with this profile, And you might have five winemakers tell you the exact same thing, but the barrels that each of them prefer are totally different.
So from the consumer's point of view, let's just say someone really doesn't just have a fleeting interest in wine, but they really want to go deep. They're invested mentally, psychologically, financially. What is the best way for them to participate from your point of view?
I mean, it depends what they like, too. I mean, when my dad started as really a, you know, kind of heavy wine consumer, that was probably in the 90s, a lot of people would go and do, you know, different tastings and tasting rooms, or they do the big tastings like at Fort Mason where all the wineries there and you can walk around. And I don't think those are as popular as they once were. People are looking for more personal experiences now, where you see now in a lot of the wineries you can have a table you sit down at and somebody will come and explain everything to you and the different wines and how they make them and why. So I think, you know, how the tasting experiences have changed is actually more towards educating people than it used to be. Because it used to be, oh, here's our Cabernet Sauvignon, there you go. But now everyone knows more. And so, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't go out wine tasting, you know, but, you know, I had some friends who were from San Francisco come up and they took me out with them. And I had a good time because it's very different where you sit down, you can talk, and the people pouring the wines are much more knowledgeable than they were, say, 20 years ago. It's a different experience.
Absolutely. And how does a barrel piece of it come in? Does it kind of fascinate you to hear them talk about their barrel program?
Yeah. I mean, they'll say, oh, we use French oak. They don't go too deep into it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to hear what they have to say.
Would it be useful for the consumer to try to delve a little bit into the barrel world as far as determining their preferences?
Potentially. I mean, there's a lot of wineries that actually try to get into that with the consumer, that they'll let them do some tastings out of a barrel sampling, or they'll sample out of different types of toasting, or different origins. And some wineries do that and some don't, but I think, you know, when they get to have that kind of education, I think they like it because you get to see what the real differences are between the different types of barrels the wineries use. I know I had a friend once who worked in a real small winery, and sometimes if he thought they'd be interested, he'd go back in the barrels and he'd grab a sample of French oak and American oak and let them try them in the glass just to see which one they preferred. And he always told me, oh yeah, when the wine's in the barrel, a lot of times they prefer the American oak, at least at that location.
Wow, what a great study. Again, we're all so different, and that's what's so great about this, is that as you follow the different elements of the wine world, you find that everything that touches the wine has a personality of its own, has a history of its own. And I think that's what's so beautiful about it.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are really interested, you know, it's hopefully they can get out and visit a lot of different producers who have different types of wines and kind of experience and investigate and find out what they like.
Absolutely. That's what makes it so exciting, and it's learning, but it's delicious in the process, right?
Right.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today. I've learned a lot. And I know you guys have done as well. And look forward to more dialogue.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.